Hey everybody, welcome to Radio Free Nintendo episode 132, brought to you by NintendoWorldReport.com, and as always, we have the regular crew here, John Lindemann.
Hey, hey.
Director of the website, I should add.
For now.
James Jones.
Hey.
Scrambling on the awards, of course. And Greg Lay.
Hello.
Who plays a lot more Japanese games than he does European games.
Currently.
I am your broken host, Jonathan Metz. I'm working with a bum shoulder, but luckily all we do is talk on this show, so it doesn't affect my performance too much. I wish
now.
I could say I was on a lot of pain meds, but the doc said it's just a strain and told me to take a leave, which doesn't affect your mental facilities a whole lot.
Well, don't forget, Johnny, if you do need to take those pain meds, according to Evan, that's the time to play Chibi Robo on the DS.
yeah, that's a good point, but I'd rather wait for Chibi Robo on Wii with new play control.
Yeah, I hope they're bringing that one to the Western markets. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but...
Well, you don't really need it to be, do you?
No, I don't, actually. That's a good point.
Yeah. All right. Well, actually, the first new Play Control game did come out last week. It was Mario Power Tennis in Japan, of course. And I haven't heard what the consensus is on that, but
it's powerful,
I don't know,
and tennis. It stars Mario.
The GameCube Mario Tennis didn't do a whole lot for me. I was a big fan of the N64 one, but
it sold really well, didn't it?
What do you mean? It came in at number one in the Japanese software chart.
There you go. Okay, well, let's get cranked up with new business.
It's been a while.
Random adjective. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, I have James going first. James, you put any thought to this?
Yeah. It's for new business?
Yeah.
Put any thought to this? I was like, well, wait, what? So,
James sits in deep thought for every new business.
Yeah. Games I have played, and that's all I have to say on the issue. No, so I actually... was gifted a relatively large computer monitor, about 24 inches, that I'm using as a TV.
That is pretty big.
Yes. And I have to say that I didn't expect the difference to be that large when I hooked up my 360 to a HD system, or to an HD screen.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, because I've been playing Mass Effect, which was almost illegible on an SD screen.
Oh, the text issue.
Yeah, but the minute I put it on HD, I could read everything. Which, yeah.
But are you sitting as close to this 24-inch screen as you would to a PC monitor, or
no? I'm sitting back like it's a regular TV.
Okay, so it's not that you're just a lot closer to it; it's that it's actually better quality.
Well, it's not better quality; it's because of the resolution that the actual shape of the letters is more precise.
It's right. Defined. Yeah,
and the colors stand out a lot better too, which I was very surprised about. But it. Unfortunately, I got it right before the final boss battle of the game. First to say about Mass Effect, it is a very good game. It really is. But if somebody tells you it's 30 to 40 hours long, they're fucking lying. I beat the game in 13 hours. With most of the bonus quests.
Wow.
So when they're like, oh, this... like Jeff Knightley, when during the Sexbox scandal came up, we're talking about... 30 seconds.
Would that be a Jeff Keighley?
Yeah, you're
Jeff
right.
Jeff Keighley, yeah.
Sorry.
not Keira Knightley. Or some sort of child
that
the two of them have.
I can see how you might juxtapose those two.
Yes.
sweet.
I believe he said it was something like, the scene in question was 30 seconds in a 30 to 40 hour game. If it took him 30 to 40 hours to beat that game, there's a very good reason he doesn't review a whole lot of games. Because
you know... Jeff Keighley's a busy man. I'm sure he doesn't review that many games, but it just made me think of something. Being a Gamefly subscriber, as I've mentioned several times, you get these newsletters, and they have like a box, like a little weekly essay or something that's written by Jeff Keighley because he has some kind of sponsorship deal with Gamefly, and there's a link in that little essay where you can actually look at his Gamefly queue. So I guess you could go there and actually, over time, get a sense of what he is actually playing. I don't know.
No, he just has a surrogate do it.
Yeah.
He has a surrogate play his games for him.
Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's 30 to 40 hours, Jeff. I gotcha.
That's power.
He's too big for games.
Well, I mean, he probably just played through about 10 hours of it and just said, okay, how long should this take? 30 to 40. I mean, I'm sure he just talked to the dev people, and they were like, yeah, it should probably take 30
to
40 hours.
It's a 30 to 40-hour game.
Yeah.
Bullshit, it's 30 to 40 hours.
So, James, I have a question about Mass Effect.
Certainly.
I haven't played it. I'm really not an American-style RPG fan. Like, I tried the original Fallout on PC, and just, I'm like, what am I supposed to do?
Now, it is not
Baldur's
RPG.
Gate 2 also is like that for me. It's like these like Western BioWare RPGs. Fallout's not BioWare, but you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. It's like you spend 30 minutes creating a character at the beginning, but you don't really have any kind of idea of like why you should put points on this stat as opposed to this other.
Nope.
And then you play through the game, but it never tells you what to do or where to go. Is it like that or not?
Nope.
That's good.
I wouldn't even call it an RPG. I would say it's a third-person shooter with RPG elements.
I would agree with that.
Because, I mean, I played it like a third-person shooter. I didn't play it like an RPG. I spent time ducking for cover and popping out to blow away robots. I mean, that's
and
what
do you,
I did.
Do you like it as a shooter, then?
Yeah. I think it's competent as a third-person shooter. And the stat advancement, I don't think you really perceive it, but I guess if I went back and went back and played it, I would recognize it's there. So, you know, it's pretty clear what the different things you can put points on do, because they actually explain, you know, this will... not only do they explain that this stat increases your health, they explain what this particular upgrade, so saying, I have 3 points to assign, what putting a point here will do for your health. So they'll say, like, I think they call it, what do they call it? Fitness is the big health upgrade for the combat for melee people. And it says, it'll say fitness 6, which means the 6th block of fitness, increases your health by 18% over the base of fitness 5.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not too bad.
Yeah, it's a lot more straightforward than most Western RPGs.
And if that unlocks a skill, you can see it on the progression chart where all the skills that be unlocked by statting up. So there's no mystery as to where these things are, and you can scroll ahead and see what they are. I mean, it doesn't hide anything. It lets you know exactly what you're going to do by doing this.
Okay. Well, I'll have to try it sometime.
Yeah, there's a lot of Western RPGs that, you know, have entire like FAQ files built around, you know, building the perfect character, and that's just because you're absolutely right, Johnny. They don't even give you any guidance whatsoever, and there's so many different factors and stuff. And also stuff that later on in the game can really affect how hard it is or how easy it is to play.
Yeah, like I would, if you're going to be good, I would strongly advise maxing out your charisma early. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be bad, max out your, what is it, dread or something like that?
Your dread.
It's the stat of how persuasive you are, either negatively or positively. Because as you level that up, certain options in conversation become available, and you can usually see them if it's not there, but you can't select them.
Yeah.
So by maxing out my charisma, I was able to save one character's life, and then I was able to avoid an entire boss battle by using charisma.
Well, I've been maxing out my dreads in anticipation of Fish Reunion Tour Summer 09. Yeah, baby!
Good lord. one thing I would say about the game is that it's absolutely stunningly pretty. I mean, it is a gorgeous game. And I kind of wonder, you know, there's just something about... what's the best way of putting it? Everything in that game is really pretty. Even in down to the faces, they look good. Mm-hmm. But something about how they move is really creepy. Did you see that, John? When they start talking and like the teeth don't look quite right?
Yeah.
I can't figure out what it is.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, what really bothered me was that filter they put on at the start. I took that off. The kind of movie grain filter.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't like that at all. I thought it looked really artificial.
Did you notice how like there's this very... It's not... I wouldn't call it pop-up, but there's this very weird like textures kind of materialize.
Mm-hmm.
That's very strange. Like, it feels like if that game had like one more month of tweaking its graphics engine, it might have been like one of the prettiest games of this generation.
Yeah, like you get the kind of the low textures, and then you get the, you know, the high quality
the medium
textures.
And then it comes into high. It's like a 3-step process. It's very weird.
Yeah, I think Gears of War 2 does that as well. It must be must have something to do with like loading them in off the disc.
And one thing I really liked about this game versus other RPGs, all your characters level up together.
Thank God.
Yeah, even if they're not on the field, they level up.
That's good.
There is no excuse for that not to be in every game from this point on. Because sometimes you just need to rotate your characters. You just need to pick a different character for the situation, or you want to experiment with character combinations. Because character combinations do make a big difference in this game.
Okay, well, I think we need to move on to Greg, who may have been playing something on a Nintendo console.
Yes, I've been dabbling a bit of WiiWare this past couple of weeks. I picked up World of Goo, sort of as promised.
Nice.
I've been thoroughly enjoying that. I've played just through the first two chapters, so it probably hasn't kicked into the more advanced stuff. I don't know, would you say it gets very much more advanced after that point, Johnny?
It does.
It's not that it gets progressively harder and harder and harder. It's that it keeps changing the formula so that you're doing different things. So it kind of resets the difficulty, but now you're doing something different. You're thinking in a different way.
So it keeps it fresh. I mean, that is the most important thing, I suppose. That, I mean, so far, you know, it kind of starts off and you're building. It's mostly just like building stuff, like building bridges and towers. And I guess like as you're getting used to the interface and things, that's pretty appropriate. But as you sort of get into the second chapter, it's more like almost like building or creating devices kind of thing, like, you know, kind of like little rope lines or things like this, using the balloons and all that. I really like that kind of stuff. That really sort of, that's more intriguing to me, and I assume that's kind of where it'll go as you go further down into the game. And I'm really pleased with it. I think it's almost perfect for WiiWare in the sense that it's so easy to just, you know, if you switch your Wii on, maybe you just finish doing something else on it and you can just press the channel and maybe play a level for a while and that's it. Or maybe you could do five levels in a row. You know, it's so kind of take anything you want from it. And the atmosphere is I guess, I mean, I knew full well because of the reviews and things, but if you kind of take a step back, that you've got a sort of WiiWare game with this sort of very kind of coherent kind of theme and the whole sort of Tim Burton style to it, it really works nicely. I really like that, that it's kind of, that even though it's only a two-man development team, it's got this extra kind of love put into it. And yeah, I guess that does manifest itself in the 1500-point price, but...
Well, the thing is, what really surprised me was the fact that there's no, like you said, I mean, two guys made it, but there's really no weakness anywhere. I mean, in terms of, I mean, the music is really good, the sound effects are really good.
Yeah, the music's excellent.
The art design is really good. I mean, the physics engine is really good. I mean,
no, it's all so sort of well rounded and polished and tight, and there's not, and certainly, you know, just the certain little atmospherics do add a little something. Like there was one level I was playing today where you sort of inside something, and at some point you have to get your sort of goo balls out into the open, and then when it does, the kind of the view changes and the music changes as well. And you know, sort of it goes from sort of being bright and colourful inside to the sort of grey and sort of moody outside, and the music changes accordingly. And it's just little touches like that are you know, obviously not integral or anything, but it's just, you know, from WiiWare you kind of get used to, you know, it being pretty reductionist and sort of get to the basics and stuff, which, like, you know, has its worth in certain respects. And obviously the size constraints on WiiWare and things like that kind of lead people down that path, but to see something that actually puts in the extra effort's really gratifying, and it shows you what can be done, even though there are obviously some pretty definite limitations on WiiWare with its very much smaller size than what XBLA and PSN offer. I mean, how many more times is it, John, do you know, like how much bigger they could be?
Of what, bigger.
The PSN stuff?
It's a couple orders,
I mean,
of magnitude.
They've moved the goalposts a couple of times, haven't they?
Yeah,
like
they
Symphony of the Night busted it at one point, and then I think, was it Bionic Commando Rearm,
well,
maybe?
Portal is like 400 megabytes, 500 megabytes at least, and then the GTA add-on is going to be probably over a gig, if I had to guess.
Yeah,
and then on PSN, there's really no limit. I mean, you can download Warhawk, which is several gigs, I would guess.
PSN is another thing again, isn't it? So yeah, many, many, many orders of magnitude larger than what you can do with WiiWare. But, you know, this goes to show you can still make something, you know, very, very well-rounded. And I mean, it's doing really well, I understand, in Europe and in America. That's constantly sort of at the top of that most popular list that they have on the shop channel.
Mm-hmm.
Since, when did it come out in America? November?
Something like that.
No, I think it was earlier than that. And oh, Denise Kegler
it
on...
It didn't come till December in Europe, so I know it was sometime later.
Well, I know Denise Kegler, she's a VP over at Nintendo of America. She was doing one of those little one-question interviews at IGN that they do, and she alluded to World of Goo being a very big success on WiiWare. Whereas, and it was in response to IGN's insinuation that a lot of WiiWare games really aren't doing well at all, and that does seem to be kind of a rumor floating around that, you know, a lot of companies are disappointed with WiiWare. But you know, I think it's good that the best game on WiiWare is doing the best.
And it's certainly got, it seems to have some pretty significant staying power, even though, you know, that's the top end of the price range as well, isn't it? $1,500. There's nothing that's broken that unless you add in like DLC.
Right, nothing yet, but
because you could. Space Invaders, Get Even or whatever it is. Technically, that's like a. Isn't that like a 2,000 point game or something, or even more?
Right,
because
it's optional.
But yeah, right. It's optional. Whereas, yeah, for a single download, I think it's the biggest, and yet, you know, it's still doing so
it
well.
Is.
So it does suggest that it's kind of getting through the how good it is, you know, because, I mean, it's so universally praised. The issue I have with it probably is just sometimes the interface does kind of let you down. Like, if you've got a situation where you've got a lot of goo balls circling around in a little structure and you're trying to sort of pluck ones out to build stuff, it can be difficult to get hold of what you want. And those little white fly things that let you do a do-over, sometimes you can just click one of those by mistake if it's a particularly busy screen. So, I appreciate they're kind of trying to keep, like, the interface very clean and kind of avoid, like, a HUD or anything. Kind of like what we was talking about with Dynamite Heady last episode, but you know sometimes you might just prefer to be able to like click a little button on the side or something rather than those little flies.
Yeah, there's a reason HUDs have come into being, and sometimes
they are functional. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I think HUDs always should be there, but it would be nice if they had like maybe like a small icon that you could hover over and then the HUD appears, something like that. You know,
or just an option. Yeah.
Is that a sneak peek in NWR 2.0?
Guilty as charged.
I've been playing a little bit of something else on WiiWare. I downloaded Cubello, which is the second WiiWare game that Johnny's given it. Second WiiWare game that Johnny's given a 6 that I've bought. Which was the other one? The other one was Dr. Mario.
It's just Johnny's default answer. 6.
Well, see, Johnny, if you'd give a Final Fantasy IV on DS a 6 instead of a 9.5 or whatever, I'd have it by now. I hold you responsible for that. I bought Cubella kind of fully knowing the expectations a lot, but 600 points is fairly on the lower end, obviously, and the block size, because after I decimated my Wii to actually fit in World of Goo, I had a few points of blocks left over, and Cubello is pretty much a perfect fit. And Orbient is undoubtedly, I'm sure, the superior game, having played Orbital myself, but I have already played it. So, yeah, went with Cubello, and I like it. It's kind of soothing. It's kind of soothing for people who have obsessive-compulsive tendencies, I think.
See that.
Match. Kind of
I really, really like the aesthetics of Cubello, and I even like the silly computer voice. What I don't like is the gameplay to me feels a little unpolished. There are a couple tweaks to it that I feel like would have made it a more satisfying game, especially over the long term.
I agree. It's unrefined. Like I said, it's a bit somewhere between a game and a visual toy, like a mental version of those stress things. Like I said, to massage people's obsessive compulsive urgings. Because like as you pointed out in your review, I really can't disagree with anything in your review from my experience.
Well,
in the game so far,
you know, that's how I do.
The random element, you know, is quite curious, isn't it? You know, the things like the bonus rounds and all that are pretty much just chance. that, yeah, you know, that a puzzle game to kind of have to have that. Oh, there's always an element of you know, probabilistic things in puzzle games, of course, but you know, in this case, it seems a little too prominent, and you know, it seems like it was kind of just because they didn't want to devise an appropriate scheme, perhaps, or they didn't have the time or the development resources to do it. But I like the concept, and you know, it's quite satisfying, like when you see a little shot that's that, you know, because it rotates by itself, you can't move the camera, so it's like if I just fit it in there and you hit it and you nail it, and that's a nice feeling, you know. It's very simple stuff, but it's
there good. Is kind of a shooter element to it, oddly enough. Yeah. Even though it's clearly a puzzle game, but because of the way you aim the blocks that you shoot onto the field, there is some timing to it, as you said, and there's some, you know, there's an element of accuracy. And yeah, there are times when you can, you know, kind of highlight a particular face of a block and shoot another one on there, and it seems like a very unlikely place to be able to shoot a block, and when you pull it off, it's very satisfying. But then the whole cluster suddenly spins around 180 degrees, and that's one of my major problems, is it's so disorienting. The way that you
Well, that's kind of some of the sort of challenge, isn't it? Like, if you're going to try and set something up.
Yeah, I think it's just a very artificial way to add challenge to it.
Yeah, it's like, so if you're going to try and set something up and you kind of like shoot it, put a block in place, but then you'd have to do it another time, then it's kind of like, well, you have to kind of think, right, so where would that be now? And how long am I going to have to wait until it comes around again? And then you shoot it, you know, those restrictions kind of do add. They create some of the structure of the game, but I agree it's not necessarily the best kind of structure.
Right. All right, well, we better move on, and the next person up is John Lindemann.
Yeah, I've been playing Castlevania III: Dracula's Curse. As you remember, nice. I said I didn't think that I had played it. I think I actually have. I think it's something I rented way, way back in the day. But yeah, it's interesting.
Back when you were 30?
Yeah. Shut up. Yeah, I rented it way, way back, and looking back, it's funny because I remember I said that I liked Castlevania 2, which was met with guffaws all around. And yeah, I kind of realized the error of my ways.
It's more like skepticism.
Skepticism,
well,
exactly.
No, like I said, I like Castlevania 2, but yeah. Then I was, what would I have been, 6 years old?
Yeah. So what are you saying, Greg?
I wasn't
bald at that point. We're talking about.
I wasn't casting any aspersions. I'm just saying, you know, I can't disagree with that, but I will put it in context.
There's a tough crowd. All right. Okay. Well, before we continue with this roast.
the sad thing is it probably should have gotten better since you became site director, but it's probably just going to get worse.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't fire me. I don't really work there anymore.
I know. I got some problem employees on my hands. But yeah, so Castlevania 3 is pretty much what Castlevania 2 should have been. I'll say that.
Yeah, you could argue it's like the real Castlevania 2, isn't it? And it's, I guess from what I've seen of like the features of it, you know, it's like beefing up and expanding on what was in the first one, whereas 2 kind of went on this parallel kind of path.
Yeah, I mean, 3 is still very arcadey. And I get the biggest kick out of the password, you know, grid thing they have going on, which I guess, I mean, I don't think, is there a way to really get around that? I don't think there is that I can think of.
They
like,
had that
on,
in Super
PC.
Castlevania 4, don't forget. The password grid.
Yeah, because I mean, I know you can suspend your game, but that doesn't really help if you actually die.
You're suspended.
Yeah, I mean.
I think the password grid hung around for a bit longer than that, actually. Yeah, mm-hmm. So that I can believe it being in 4.
There's no way that you can circumvent it with the VC version, though.
No,
you're still pretty.
No, you're stuck with the password grid, and because they're just basically straight ports.
Yeah, of course. They're not even ports. They're just the original ROM.
They're straight ROMs, yeah.
Pretty much. But the nice thing about a password system, as antiquated as it seems, is that you can always like go to GameFAQs and dig up a password for, you know, to get to a level that you have difficulty getting to otherwise. Mm-hmm. I mean, actually in those grid-based systems especially, they're pretty easy to hack and find like little tricks to give yourself 9 lives or something like that. Mm-hmm. I remember in Mega Man 3, I believe, there was a very, very easy way to you know, it had this grid-based system where you put in like little red dots for your password into this 4x4 grid. Mm-hmm. And if you put a red dot in this one particular space, it would give you 9 energy tanks. And you could modify any valid password in this way. Mm-hmm. So even if you're using your own legitimate password to get back to where you stopped, you could give yourself 9 energy tanks.
Yeah, someone cracked the code.
The other thing is I love the irony of a password save system in a game that can be completed in about 45 minutes.
Well, you know, just in case you've only got 30 to play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually got 20 to play and 10 to write down the passcode.
Castlevania 3 would probably take you longer than 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But, I mean, you can see it's very much, I mean, you can see from, you know, that final NES, you know, version of the game to, you know, like Castlevania 4. I mean, it's pretty much just, I mean, they took the exact same concept as Castlevania 3 and just beefed up the graphics and made things, you know, like branching paths and all that kind of stuff.
But I mean, the Castlevania 4 is a bit more straightforward than Castlevania 3. You don't have extra characters.
Does it have branching paths? Castlevania 4?
No, it's purely linear. Because Castlevania 4 is actually just Castlevania. In Japan, it was just labeled, you know, a remake of the first one, essentially. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the plot and stuff, so it's kind of spiritually very similar. But obviously, the gameplay is expanded with the whip and stuff. But yeah, and Castlevania 3 is kind of, you know, is more advanced in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But other stuff I've been playing actually. Yesterday, which was Super Bowl Sunday, you know, revealing when we, not to reveal too much behind the curtain as to when we tape these, but I had the great experience of, I got a buddy who has a projector set up, and he projects, it's a 720p projector that he projects on his wall, and he made this 120-inch screen on the wall, which is where we watch Super Bowl. But the best thing about it was he just got a 360 with Rock Band 2. So we were sitting there playing Rock Band 2 on this 120-inch screen. It was pretty amazing. And really, like, getting that game, getting, like, you know, three other drunk people playing that game is a really good time, even if people suck. So.
Was the screen almost too big to play it on? I think that would be more difficult with the big gap you have to watch between the button presses.
No,
I was thinking that, too.
No, it wasn't bad at all. The only problem that we had, and I guess this is a problem with Rock Band in general, I don't know if it happens on the Wii version, maybe Nick could enlighten us on this, but with his setup, there was a microphone lag. So when you spoke into the mic or sang into the mic, there was like a slight delay coming out of your speakers, which is really, really annoying. And apparently that's a problem on both the 360 and the PS3 version. And it has something to do with how the game
encodes... I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it has something to do with how the game encodes your vocals.
It's actually really, really terrible.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you can go in the audio options and turn down the volume of your own voice coming back through the speakers.
Yeah. But that's kind of annoying. I mean, I like to have like just like a faint little bit, you know.
Yeah, I do too. Because for one thing, it helps most people adjust their pitch once they can hear themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm. It looks to me like it's across all versions.
Really?
Just from consulting the internet.
I think the bigger problem is that there's a very slight delay between when you sing something into the microphone and when the pitch indicator shows up on the screen. So you almost have to start singing before the line comes up just so that it'll be ready, you know.
Well, and if you're adjusting on the fly, that would make it much harder to make these kind of nuanced adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, just from performing, you know, with real instruments, you have to learn perfect pitch to be able to make those kinds of adjustments right.
Yeah.
So if there was a delay, you couldn't even make them. It'd be impossible.
Yeah, I looked on the Harmonix forums, and they didn't seem to have an answer for it.
Because they deleted it.
Yeah. No, they were pretty cool about it. They actually were sitting there, like, you know, asking people exactly what kind of setups they have, because I mean, I've never had that problem with Rock Band 2, but I'm not running anything through a stereo. I mean, I'm not running anything through a receiver. I mean, my friend has a full AV setup with, like, you know, like 5.1 surround and everything, and so there's something in between there.
Oh, yeah. So I was expecting maybe just a pair of laptop speakers to go with 120-inch screen.
That's perfect.
That's pretty much what I have.
I've seen that before, by the way.
Yeah.
I've done that before, by the way.
But I don't know, John. I think maybe at this point you'll agree with me that my biggest hope beyond anything else for the Beatles Rock Band game coming out this year, mm-hmm. is that they give a little more attention to the vocal part. Mm-hmm. And especially the Beatles. I mean, it's basically a vocal band, right? Yeah. I mean, they're all about the vocals. And I just think that part of the game, number one, needs to be brought up to par with the quality of the rest of the game, mm-hmm. because right now it's been kind of ignored since the days of Karaoke Revolution,
yeah.
which is a Harmonix series from 5-6 years ago. And number two, I think there are a lot of things they could do to actually improve it. I mean, like every year they talk about their new guitar and their new drums, and you know, they've made all these, now there's a drum trainer. Where's the vocal trainer? You know, can we have a microphone with a friggin' button on it? I mean, there's just so much that they could do. And oddly enough, the little, Innes's little 360 karaoke game Lips, I think, did more to kind of push forward the whole singing into a video game microphone genre than Rock Band has.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, it's got a force feedback microphone with lights on it that tell you when it's your turn, you know.
Yep.
I mean, that it's very small stuff, but at least they're trying. Yeah. At least they're not packing in a 10-year-old USB microphone in with the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the one area of the game where they could really push it forward. But it's probably also the most difficult part of the game, because it would, you know, it would be really cool, for example, if they would have some, you know, if they would make some code that could actually help you with the pitch of your voice, you know? I mean, really vocally train you.
Yeah, it's,
I mean,
sure.
Stuff that nobody else is doing.
Well, no, there are software suites out there that do that.
Yeah, and why aren't they incorporating them?
Because they're fucking expensive.
Yeah. Well,
it just seems like the kind of thing that could be done in Rock Band. You know, Rock Band 2 has a mode that teaches you to play the drums. Mm-hmm. Period.
Well, teaching the drums is a lot easier, though, because it's very, you know, it's very digital. You either hit the right drum or you didn't. With the voice, it's analog. There's a huge swath of sound that you can
hear. It's analog, but they've already got the visual feedback system in place. Here's another thing. They could build in, like, an auto-tuner. Like all the professional singers like Britney Spears use,
like Kanye West.
It seems like a good option at a party for somebody who's very. And I found this a lot with Rock Band. I get a lot of people who come over and play it, and they're scared to do the vocals because they think they're really bad. And you know, I think it would help if maybe there's an option you can turn on that will adjust the playback of your voice back through the speakers and auto-correct the pitch a little bit.
I think they should have
real time.
Well, I wish they would have Rock Band T-Pain. That would be awesome.
No.
have an entire catalog of all of T-Pain's classics. I'm in love with a stripper. You know? Come on.
We know you are, James.
You know, their catalog is really lacking in hip-hop, that's for sure.
Oh.
Yeah, well,
yes.
I'll be interested to see how they respond to DJ Hero, which was recently announced by Activision.
That'll have a lot of hip-hop, for sure. Okay, well, I will finish up new business. I've got a few things here, but some of them will be short. I finished Dead Space yesterday, finally, or the day before yesterday, and I've had it for a couple of months. I've been borrowing it from a friend. I actually felt bad for how long I've had it, but it's just not a game that I played every day. It was a game that I usually played for 2 hours at a time when I played it, but that just wasn't all that often, and I really like it. It's not that I didn't like it and, you know, was kind of forcing myself through it. But it is a game that I think is kind of hard to play for several hours at a time because it's very repetitive. It's like every mission is pretty much the same. They maybe add a new kind of enemy or something. But it is a bit repetitive, but if you spread it out over a long enough period of time, it's not so bad.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing with No More Heroes. I can't play
there
that
you go.
In a concentrated fashion.
That one's a little bit repetitive, too. But the end sequence of Dead Space is great. The final chapter is really interesting. It's quite a bit different than the others, and there's a great boss fight at the end. So, overall, I really like it. It's, like I said, it is a bit too repetitive, I think. The structure could have... They really didn't go all that original or creative with the structure of the game. But it's hard for me to dislike a game that's basically a mix between Metroid Prime and Resident Evil. I mean, that's a pretty inspired combination, and it really is kind of right in between the two. And the sound design is some of the best I've ever heard in any game. It's incredible. So, yeah, Dead Space is good shit, and glad that I played it. I really am. I also have been getting back into Wii Fit. I don't know if back into is the right term, but I use it. Basically, it's become part of my morning routine, like when I'm still just trying to wake up and eat breakfast. I turn it on and weigh myself, and that's basically all I've done. I haven't been playing the games or doing a lot of yoga or anything.
Well, that was the original concept. I mean, that was what the game was built around, wasn't it?
I know, and I've owned the game for like 4 months, and I've never really used it like that on a regular basis.
Right.
And so I thought, I just kind of have felt in the past couple weeks like I want to get in better shape. I want to do something about myself, and
so you go out and hurt your shoulder, basically.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I figured I'd just, you know, nice. get in shape, so I just went out and broke both my legs.
Just turned into Terry Tate, office linebacker, all of a sudden. Jacked somebody up hard.
That injury came after 5 hours of skiing, so I was getting my exercise in.
Mr.
Okay.
Calorie Burner, Johnny Mets.
Oh, buddy, I am. I'm a calorie roaster. I'm a calorie roaster, according to Hula Hoop. But I lost 5 pounds last week, and I weighed myself 7 days in a row. So
nice.
Hopefully I'm going to keep that up and lose a few more and continue to get in better shape. So far, at least over a week, I think Wii Fit works. It's not that I burned a lot of calories on Wii Fit, but it kind of made me think about what I was eating and the exercise.
It's the monitoring
the exercise I was getting.
And it's meant to
be
like,
psychological.
To say the biggest thing is like in a family setting that it's like that peer pressure, mutual monitoring thing, that if everyone's looking at each other's graphs, it enforces them to do stuff.
I guess so. I don't have that experience, but I did find it to be kind of a good psychological check on myself. Yeah.
So now using it every day like that, is there anything that it's missing that you would like in Wii Fit 2?
Oh, there's a ton of stuff. Yeah. I wish I could create like a workout playlist of the activities that I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I wish it would suggest activities for me based on the problems that I'm having or the things that I really like to do. I think also the way that the game unlocks things as you play through is way too gamey for what Wii Fit is supposed to be used for. I think it should come with all the yoga poses unlocked and all the strength training unlocked. The balance games are kind of different because those are really just for fun. But the other stuff, you know, I shouldn't have to unlock. It's not a Mario game. You know, it's not Pokemon. I shouldn't have to unlock features out of this thing. It should be ready. It's supposed to be a tool, right? And honestly, unlocking a new yoga pose is not all that motivating. It doesn't really get me to play more. Just, oh my God, I can't wait to get the Lotus. It's just, you know, it just doesn't work the same as it does in a real video game. So I think that's kind of a poor choice. But I would love to see Wii Fit 2. I'm sure they're brewing up a lot of ideas for it. But I think it'll happen eventually, and I think there's a lot of room for improvement. But what we have is pretty good, you know. And I'm definitely looking forward to the EA Sports Active or whatever they're calling it, you know, the competitor that's coming out this year. Because I think from what I've read about their ideas for it, they're already kind of planning to improve on a lot of things over Wii Fit.
Yeah, and also I could see them
competition's
doing some pretty
good.
Some pretty cool online stuff with that too.
There could be a lot of online stuff that it's not doing. So, I've also been sort of non-reviewing a non-game called Personal Trainer Math. You know, I'm retired from writing reviews for the site, but I told them that I would write something about it in some kind of other format yet to be determined. And so they sent the review copy to me of Personal Trainer Math, and I got to tell you, man, it is a pile of shit. It's really terrible. And obviously, I don't have a problem with non-games or learning tools or exercise tools. I like that stuff. I still play Brain Age 2 frequently on my DS. Personal Trainer Math is just a mess. It's really, really bad. And looking at the really high quality and originality of Personal Trainer Cooking and what I think is going to be a pretty surprisingly interesting product with Personal Trainer Walking, which comes out next month, I think. I think Personal Trainer Math is kind of does an injustice to the brand. Because there's no personal trainer element to it. It doesn't train you to do anything. All it is a big workbook of math problems, and you do the same problems over and over and over. It tells you when you're wrong, but it doesn't even tell you the corrected answer. and the entire game is built around speed. So for it doesn't even tell you why, but for some unknown reason, the entire game is built around encouraging you to learn to add half a second faster. And I don't think that's practical in the real world. I don't think it has any measurable benefit. And I think there are a lot of real problems that people have with doing math that are completely ignored by this. So it's a pointless poorly made.
All about speed. It just sounds like the arithmetic parts of brain age, which is not really suitable in the maths training context.
I have to tell you, the math parts of Brain Age and Brain Age 2 are better than anything that's in this game. Wow. I'm not kidding. I mean, it's obviously this game has a somewhat larger scope in terms of the kinds of problems that
sure,
it gives
I
you,
hope so.
But they're not done as well, and they're not as fun.
Because the point with Brain Age is obviously you it assumes you have the knowledge to perform those mathematical tasks, but it's getting you to do them quicker and quicker and quicker, make you sharper.
Right.
Whereas if something called math training, one would assume it's not going to assume you know how to do these things, and therefore, like you said, it would be like telling you how you got it wrong, or this, that, and the other. So it just seems like it is a bit of a misnomer, and it's probably a kind of lazily rebranded bit of software.
Oh, yeah, the whole thing feels very lazy, very thrown together. It just doesn't really have a reason for being, and it's a huge missed opportunity, because I think the idea of having a video game that teaches you how to do math better is great, and they didn't make that at all. This is something completely different that really has no reason to exist. And on top of that, it's kind of poorly made. It's very shoddy. It has this kind of half-hearted little animated guy who keeps telling you, work faster, work faster. Oh, good, you got a good time. It's like, why do you care? You know, why don't you give me a tip on how better to multiply these two-digit numbers together? But it doesn't even teach you the basics. It doesn't teach you anything. It just gives you problems that says, here, do these. It's terrible. Don't spend $20 on it. The last thing I've been playing, I just kind of wanted to throw this out there because it's, a little controversial, but it's Nicky Rockin' Ball, the WiiWare game that was released a couple weeks ago. And it's 500 points, that's one of the best things about the game. It is cheap, and I think because it's cheap, I'm not kidding. It's
nice.
It's cheap. It's not
over.
Well, but so many things on WiiWare are overpriced, and this is not. And I think that's a pro for it. But it's not a great game by any means. But I think it's decent, and I've had a pretty decent time playing it. And I've just been a little surprised at the extremely negative reviews that I've seen all over the place. I mean, our own Nick DeMola pretty much hated it, had almost nothing good to say about it. And I've read a lot of stuff like that. It just seems like everybody despises this game, and except WiiWare World, who gave it really way too high of. I think they gave it like an 8.8 out of 10,
yeah,
which is bloated.
It was an 8 or more, and that was quite some time ago when it came out in Europe, and I guess not that many other outlets kind of review WiiWare games when they're just out in Europe yet. So
right.
It was still kind of like that was all a lot of people had to go off when it was released on the North American Shop Channel, and it sounds like that's upset some people.
Yeah,
I mean, with the quality.
I saw that review and it was so high. I thought, well, for five bucks. I'm going to download this and see it, you know, and I was not nearly as disappointed as a lot of other people seem to be, but I don't know what it is, but I think it's kind of clever in some ways. I don't think the graphics are nearly as hideous as everybody else is saying. Nick said something like it looks like the art was done in Microsoft Paint. And I'm not sure he's ever used Microsoft Paint, but it cannot be used to make anything that looks nice like this game. So
I think that's what we call hyperbole, Johnny.
I guess so, but it really doesn't look that bad.
I would have thought you'd be more familiar with hyperbole, considering James does the show with us every week.
I am dead serious with everything I say.
In writing, I don't think it comes across quite the same way.
Fair point.
I have played games that look like they were done in Microsoft Paint.
Okay.
I think Nicky Rockin' Ball is... I don't know, some people obviously aren't going to like it, but for me, I don't regret spending $5 on it. I've played it for an hour at least. So that's more than I've played some of the WiiWare games I paid even more for. So anyway, it's just... I guess I haven't really said anything about the game itself or how it plays, but... go read the review at WiiWare World and ignore the score. The last thing I've been playing, I didn't play it for long because it's really short, but it's called Legend of Princess. Yeah, and I recommended it to everybody on the staff. You played it, John?
Yeah, I played it. I downloaded it. It's pretty cool. It's cool stuff.
It's pretty freaking awesome. It's a free game online, and it's not a browser game. You download it and open up the folder and basically just click on it and it starts playing. But you can search for this on Google and you'll find it. This guy named Konjac made it, and it's brilliant. It's a 2D action platformer based on the Legend of Zelda series, and it's totally unofficial. It's arguably illegal, and maybe you should download it as soon as possible before Nintendo does a cease and desist.
Well, I mean, but, from what the guy was saying, he
brilliant.
Made it pretty quickly, right? He made it like over a couple of days.
I think so.
Which is brilliant.
Wow, that's hard to believe.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
It has so much great art, so much really funny animation. The controls are very, very smooth and very good, especially for something you play with arrow keys, most likely on your keyboard. It's kind of like, I don't know, to me it feels like Zelda 2 done right.
Do you think perhaps it was just a bet? Someone said, "I bet you can make something. Can you make something better than the CDI Zelda games in a day?" And he said, "All right then."
Yeah,
it's
better,
much better
than
that.
The CDI Zelda games right now.
I think it's brilliant
on paper as we speak.
It wasn't setting the bar that high. Yeah.
I'm telling you, I think Nintendo should hire this guy and let him make an entire game out of this for DS, because I would buy it in a heartbeat. It's brilliant.
Or
it's really
or at least
fun.
Something like DSiWare or WiiWare.
Yeah,
or...
WiiWare. It's great. It's fantastic.
He really knows what he's doing, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
He really
and,
does.
And the only really sad part is that the whole thing, it takes less than half an hour to play through. It's really one level, but it's a pretty long level. It's completely genius, and I definitely recommend everybody should go try it out. It's called Legend of Princess. So that's all I've got. Before we head into the break, I want to kind of wrap up our retroactive feature for Dynamite Heady. I don't think any of us really played it a whole lot since last week, but we did have some final comments on the forums from everybody who's playing along. So I wanted to read a few of these. Drew MG said, "Very strange little game." I think we can all agree with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gojira said, "I'm happy this came up and gave me the motivation to play through the game again. The aesthetic of the game really reminded me of Paper Mario. There is some very nice use of 3D effects in this game. It isn't as impressive as what they probably could have done on the Super Nintendo, but I was very surprised and happy that they were easy to navigate, because a lot of pseudo 3D back in the 8-bit and 16-bit era was rather clunky. This is in response to something we talked about last week. The number that you're supposed to remember after bonus levels is to gain access to a secret final boss. You have to complete the bonus level 4 times before beating the game, and then after you beat the game, you're asked to enter the code, which is made up of those numbers were told to remember, and then you fight a secret boss, which is a businessman, although in the Japanese version it's actually the president of Sega, which is awesome.
Nice. That's great.
Unfortunately, I'm kind of afraid I'll never actually see the end of that game because it's too hard.
Yeah, I'm hoping there's a sort of analogous situation here, because obviously now when Treasure sort of split off from Konami or whatever, Sega kind of started publishing all their games.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of what's going on with Platinum games. obviously splitting with, you know, with the Clover situation and Capcom. So now that they've been picked up by Sega, maybe there can be a secret last boss in Mad World where some very unpleasant things are done to the president of Sega.
The president of Sega would probably deserve it.
Yeah. More like what they did to Sonic the Hedgehog franchise.
His sins are multitude.
Yes.
All right. Cambot, or maybe that's pronounced Kembo. I'm not sure. Could be like a name of a cheese. Anyway, this person writes, the level...
John flexing his Canadian muscles.
Join. That's my favorite French
word.
Throw
off your ancestral oppressors, John.
I'm trying every day, man.
All right. Kembot says, the levels in Dynamite Heady are like sweating through one fever dream after another. That's great. Yeah. Another thing I like is how this game takes me back to the 90s. Aside from it being on Genesis, there's a bunch of cheesy 80s and 90s movie title puns in the names of the stages. Mad Max, Terminate Her 2, and oddly, Mad Dog and Heady. And as always, big ups to Treasure for pushing Sega's hardware. And finally, we have a comment from Golden Phoenix. She says, it is kind of funny that Treasure was able to get some impressive visuals that people doubted could be done on Genesis, but their Wario game on GameCube was pretty dang ugly. And I think Treasure's has been very spotty with 3D games. It's weird because they really did kind of push the N64 in some interesting ways with Sin and Punishment, and then just maybe 2 years later, two or three years later, they were working on Wario World for GameCube, and it really wasn't all that interesting at all in terms of graphics or gameplay. I know TYP played it. I think he reviewed it for us, and he thought it was just kind of very bland and boring. I played it at E3 once, and that was enough for me.
That is a very repetitive game. There's a few good hallmarks of Treasure in there, like some of the bosses are pretty cool, and there's a few levels that are kind of more platform-ish, because it's mostly a brawler, but there's a few things that are kind of a bit more platform game-ish, some cool little design things, like we could play this level where you're playing it in the reflection of a mirror and things like that, and you're kind of switching between the two.
That's so Treasure.
Yeah, so there's a few of little flourishes of them in there, but for the most part, it's like... Yeah, a solid but fairly pedestrian kind of uncreative sort of brawler. So yeah, that's not one of their finer moments, I suppose. That Wario World, I'd say. But I guess in terms of getting the most out of a system, you could obviously they are quite a small team. It's probably easier to do that like with more sort of with fewer people in the 16-bit era than it is now with the way graphics are. I thought it's kind of more labor intensive to really push stuff rather than sort of ingenuity intensive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's going to close out our discussion of Dynamite Heady. And next week, we'll be talking about game number 2. This isn't really news for those of you who have followed the poll that went on in our forums, but retroactive game number 2 is going to be Luigi's Mansion. It came down to a very close vote between that and Super Ghouls and Ghosts. And Luigi won barely right at the end. So if you want to play along, I hope you will, go out and find a copy or dig out your old copy that you never really finished. And we're going to try to do the same. And next week we'll be talking about it. And as you play it and your thoughts bubble up to the surface, you can go to our forums and find the official thread in the podcast discussion for Luigi's Mansion discussion, and leave your thoughts there. We'll probably be talking there too, and obviously the best comments we'll dig out and talk and read off on the show next week. So thanks for everybody who voted on that. It was a good turnout, I think, and hopefully it's just going to keep building up and up as the retroactive becomes a standard part of the show. So anyway, that's going to end our first segment. We'll be back with listener mail, and we'll actually have a very rare news segment where we'll talk about some of the recent game announcements for Wii and DS. Okay, we'll be right back. Listener mail, your listener mail, that was sent to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com.
What's the address again?
RFN.
That stands for Radio Free Nintendo, at nintendoworldreport.com. That's our website. It has articles you can read.
If you can read.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, you know, the podcast would be a useful medium for someone who can't read.
Mm-hmm. And we've just alienated our entire illiterate listening base.
You know, that's okay. All right, here we go. James, start us off.
James D. writes, and no, that's not my last name, so it's not me. After hearing so much about Chrono Trigger on Radio Free Nintendo, and seeing as I have always been curious about it, I decided to pick it up the port on the DS. I'm really enjoying it, but I'm wondering what truly makes it so popular. It doesn't seem too different for other games of that time period, like Tales of Phantasia, Final Fantasy V, etc. I'd like to know what exactly makes it such a groundbreaking title. The battle system doesn't seem too different from that of Final Fantasy series, other than the fact it moves in real time, and on some of the enemies I've seen, you'll have to wait for an opening before you can attack. It just doesn't seem too different from other JRPGs from that time.
Well, I think we've all played it now, haven't we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I played it, but yeah. I haven't really played its contemporaries, so I'm not qualified to answer this. All I can say is what fewer random encounters, much less leveraged on that, so that's, you know, in terms of that you can avoid a lot of battles if you want, just by sort of
avoiding them.
You know, so that was something that certainly, I think, made it far more enjoyable for me than if I had played some of the other games at the time.
I would say the battle system is much more closely related to Tales of Phantasia, because Tales of Phantasia, I believe, is real-time.
Yeah, but Tales of Phantasia is kind of action-based. Like,
right.
You're moving your character around and pushing a button like in a Zelda game during battles. Whereas with Chrono Trigger, it's just that it has the whole RTB system, real-time battle, or whatever Square was calling it at the time.
Yeah.
And actually, Final Fantasy VI has that as well. Mm-hmm. So
Final Fantasy V, however, what did it have?
I don't think FF5 had that, or
but 4. That stuff did show up in, not to the same extent, but stuff like that did show up in earlier Final Fantasy games, though, didn't it? With the bar?
No, I don't think so. I think, yeah, the bar in terms of, like, everybody's time filling up, I think that kind of started in 6. And I know if it wasn't in 4, they retroactively added it with the DS remake, because it is in there. But, anyway, it's... That's kind of a nitpicky thing. I don't think that's what makes it feel different. I think, for me, it's really the aesthetic more than anything. It's the story and
music.
The art style. And the music. The music is great, but the music is great in Super Nintendo
Final Fantasy games,
too.
All kind of went the same way until, I could say until 7. They all kind of went, you know, kingdom threatened by evil power.
Mm-hmm.
Hero goes out, finds magical relic, beats back evil, who wants relic, kingdom saved, the end.
Right. The story in Chrono Trigger is very unorthodox. And to me, the whole style of the game was a lot closer to like a comic book than to Tolkien, you know? And so that really appealed to me. And it's not that I don't like that other stuff, because I definitely do, but it's just, it was a breath of fresh air for somebody who played a lot of that kind of game back then. And it's material that really wasn't done to death afterwards either. Mm-hmm. I mean, the aesthetic of Chrono Trigger really hasn't been reproduced by anything else, not even Chrono Cross, which is sort of this quasi sequel to it. So, for me, Chrono Trigger feels unique, and you can't say that about very many games, and especially not about very many RPGs,
because
they do tend to be sort of very cookie cutter, and they all kind of come out of the same template.
That's the thing.
And
I mean,
Chrono Trigger doesn't.
And you're saying it's unique now. I mean, even now you're saying it's
unique. I do, yeah. I think now it's unique.
But think back then, it was even more different than anything else that was out there because everything was Dragon Warrior.
It was mind-blowing back then.
Yeah.
It really was. In the same way, although it's very different from Earthbound, but I think it has the same appeal that it is so clearly not like other games. Mm-hmm. And in Chrono Trigger's case, it's mostly aesthetic, whereas in Earthbound, there's some major gameplay differences too, but it's very aesthetic there as well. You know, the story, it takes place in a different kind of place than you're used to in video games, and it does different things. It doesn't take itself too seriously. I don't know. I think Chrono Trigger, it is a lot like Earthbound in that way.
It kind of plays with the conventions of what James was talking about as well, in terms of the early phases of the game, focusing on the medieval time
right.
period and Magus and Frog and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns out that there's way, way, way more beyond that. You know, that's just this tiny little tip of the iceberg about
right.
the plot. And you think, like, you know, that's like what the whole game's going to be about or whatever. And then it's you know, it's much, much bigger and grander
right.
and more, you know, sci-fi and wacky and everything, you know. So I guess that is kind of... It was kind of like blowing up the convention.
Right. And I think the way that the game uses time travel really has never been done in any other video game as well or in quite the same way. And, you know, for an RPG to do something like give you a side quest where you go to the future and fight a boss to get an item and then go 65 billion years in the past or 65 million years in the past and put that item in a certain place so that it can collect energy, and then go back to the present to collect it when it has all that energy collected, only to find that it's been stolen at some period in the past. So now you have to go back and do a little detective work and figure out what happened to it and track that down and do something else to retrieve this item and put it back where it's supposed to go, and then finally go back to the future where now you get this item that has been stored up with all this energy, and now you can go back to a different period of time and give it to this smith so he can make a weapon out of it for you. It's crazy. That is so out of the box. And for me, playing it, especially as a teenager, it was so, I don't know, it was just great, you know? It's like, I've never done this in any other game. I've never done anything like this in any RPG.
So there you go.
I'm a little ecstatic, as you can tell. It's like the game is so convoluted, and yet it's easy to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it strikes that balance in a very sublime way.
I also think that with a lot of prominent game journalists, there's a high nostalgia factor just because of the age of a lot of, you know, prominent game journalists and the time that game came out and when they played it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of
yeah.
warm and fuzzy feelings around Chrono Trigger.
Yeah. And the other thing about it is that it's a game that's very accessible to people who normally don't play RPGs. And because of that, I think you'll find that it has a lot of fans who typically didn't play Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest back then. And so it has a different, maybe wider fan base. And over the years, those people have told other people about it. And so that's kind of why it has this mystique. And it's not just a really niche RPG from, you know, 12, 14 years ago. It has this kind of aura about it because it's different. So my answer to how it's different is that it's different.
a little intangible.
Sorry, it is intangible. Yeah. Okay, we better move on to the next letter.
Okay, I've got this one. This is from Massimo in Bergamo, Italy. And he says, "Hi guys, have you heard about the new patent by Miyamoto? What do you think about this new way to bridge the gap between hardcore and casual gamers? I love the idea of the hint system. Your podcast is great." So yeah, this is what's been, what is it being referred to as the kind code, or this patent that Miyamoto has about kind of being able to have a hint system in which you can actually kind of watch a section being played for you, essentially, like have it sort of demonstrated how you would actually sort of get past a particular part of a game, and then
isn't that called YouTube?
Or a tutorial?
Yeah, built-in YouTube, yeah. No, but I mean, I guess what's kind of been talked about a lot with this in some of the conversation around it is, say, for instance, in a Zelda game, because the patent kind of inferred a Zelda thinks it's like Legend of Blank or whatever in the sort of little sketches and things that accompany the patent. But you know, say for, there was a puzzle, I don't know, some sort of in a dungeon, you know, a room with some sort of physical environmental puzzle, and someone was kind of scratching their head, go, how the hell do I do this? You know, I just want to get on with it, but I can't, and maybe they can't be bothered to look at a fact or something. And you could just basically just watch the puzzle being solved, and then you can actually...
I don't really understand why you need a patent for that, but...
yeah, I'm not sure about the legal elements or, you know,
it's
whatever.
An interesting idea.
Also, contained within it was things like being able to play just, you know, sort of scenes from a game in a self-contained way, a bit like this whole thing with, like, what Alone in the Dark did with, like... that it was like a DVD of a TV series. You could kind of go into different bits, like some sort of that kind of component or whatever. I mean, I guess the most exciting thing about this idea from my point of view is the idea that you could have a Zelda game which was more challenging, because they've been pretty bloody easy lately. And therefore that people who were kind of into the plot, into the atmosphere or whatever, and they just want to keep going, but they might get stuck on one of these sort of challenging bits, could just say, well, you know, it's really easy for me to just, I'm not going to get frustrated or disinterested because it's so easy for me to just go, oh, that's how you do it, right, let's move past.
I think the clever part is that it brings the utility of game facts to people who don't know that game facts exists.
Exactly.
And it's probably easier to use.
No, it's not just game facts. I mean, there could just be parts of the game that are legitimately too difficult to beat for a player.
Yeah, you needn't just be what I was talking about with a puzzle where it's right. Like the you don't know the idea of how to beat it, but it could be simply the execution.
Right, it's just
as well,
too
like
hard.
A boss battle and that's another thing. I mean, the boss battles in Zelda have gotten kind of ridiculously easy, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Far too easy, especially once you've sort of know the general idea of how to beat it, then the execution part has been kind of ludicrously simple. And if you could actually sort of therefore tune the difficulty a little differently, knowing that people have this option so readily available to them, that could be good for everyone. I mean, it really could.
Yeah, I don't see much downside to it. I mean, it's effectively, you know, kind of an overblown tutorial, which is fine, you know. I mean, I don't see.
But tutorial is about generalities, isn't
yeah.
it? Whereas this is very specific.
Yeah, it's a walkthrough.
It's an interactive walkthrough. Okay, last question before we leave this. Is this a patent that Miyamoto filed personally? I mean, I've heard numerous people refer to this as his patent.
Yeah, I can't give you any specifics beyond that. It is a bit of an interesting thing that it's so
is it just
personal.
A case of people assuming that anything done by Nintendo
it
can be attributed
be
to
that
Miyamoto?
That the petitioner has to actually list a name and then a company that is backing it. I'm not sure how Japanese patent law works. And
indeed.
And there are some places where the patent law does work that way. An individual patents it and then they say he is an agent of this company.
Right. Mm.
Another thing, though, that could be beneficial about this is if you're replaying through a game, if there was a part you didn't particularly like, and in terms of just purely skipping it, you could just say...
Water dungeons.
Well, but, yeah, exactly. If you could just say, I'm replaying through, you know, Zelda 64, and you just say, no, don't want to deal with the water, and you could actually skip it.
I could ask you which Zelda 64, but it doesn't fucking matter, because you'd want to skip both of them.
Okay, well, John has the next question.
Okay.
Or the next letter.
This one is from Bonbon123.
Can you repeat that?
Bonbon123. and Bonbon says, hello, the Legend of Zelda series is my favorite Nintendo franchise, and like many gamers, I thrive for news or information about the next title. I have just recently picked up the Wind Waker, and I'm surprised by how much I am enjoying the cel-shaded graphics. It is a much friendlier and more inviting look than Twilight Princess's dark environments. Anyway, I was wondering if you think that the next Zelda title will follow Wind Waker's cel-shaded, more casual-looking style. It would seem to be a perfect fit for what the Wii could accomplish and what Nintendo is trying to do with the casual gamer. I hope for something at the upcoming E3 and hope for an adventure which utilizes the full potential of the Wii Motion Plus.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised if it wasn't at least some sort of variant on the on a Wind Waker style. Mm-hmm. I think they like it. They've continued it with Phantom Hourglass and things, and you know, the Twilight Princess is Twilight Princess. That's done. Yeah, they're not going to iterate on that, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so concerned about the graphical style of the next game in the series.
No, it's not a big concern.
You know, I would like to see them kind of like freshen up the actual, you know, game concept a little bit. Just do some different things and maybe add some more elements to it.
Yeah, that's the most important thing. But I think they probably will do it in the context of that sort of more, as the letter implies, accessible, welcoming kind of visual style. Mm-hmm. And that may be where the game's going, and maybe it'll dovetail with the pattern in the previous question as well, but you know, they will kind of make it more welcoming that way. And like I said, if it could really, you know, if the Nintendo does do a pretty good job, I would say, of catering to people simultaneously a lot of the time, by putting in these sort of different layers of achievement in games, you know, that are kind of more subtle than just choosing a hard mode or whatever. But I think with the Zelda games, they've run into some trouble with that. And, I think maybe the pattern combined with the Wind Waker-style visuals could really be a Zelda for all people. You know, that's what you'd like. I mean, Phantom Hourglass, how well do you think that did that? That was obviously the idea. I mean, how well did it really appeal to everyone?
Yeah, it did.
Well,
I think the best way of saying it is it's not a regular Zelda game. It really isn't. It's something else entirely. Mm-hmm. And if you accept it as that, I think the gameplay is...
Well, see, the funny thing about it, though, is I actually like the more adventure game bits, like doing stuff with your map and stuff like that. Some of it was obnoxious, but, you know, at times it was kind of neat. But I just think if it maybe been backed up by more robust... the traditional Zelda elements have been a little more robust, then I think it would have held up better.
I definitely didn't have a problem with the controls. Never, and I like Phantom Hourglass, but I did have some complaints with it, and very, very few of them had anything to do with controls. I don't have a problem with Nintendo doing new controls, and I think with the next Zelda for Wii, they will definitely go with new controls.
You've got to think Wii Motion Plus is going to be a big part of it.
Right. I think Motion Plus is a given. They need a big marquee title, especially for the... the long-term Nintendo fans, people who buy every Zelda game and every Mario game, and I think Zelda could very well be the one that they push to that crowd with Motion Plus, and if it has this walkthrough system, if it has the kind of more inviting graphic style like Wind Waker and Phantom Hourglass, it could also be a great bridge title for people who bought Wii Sports Resort. You know, very. You know, casual users or whatever, you know, to say, hey, here's another game you can play with your Motion Plus. So I think it could very much go to everybody in that sense. But yeah, again, I'm not worried about the graphic style. I do think it'll probably be cel shaded or whatever you want to call it, toon shaded, just because they seem to like that. That art style seemed to work very well for them on the DS. You remember, they've really been trying to find ways to make Zelda work in the Japanese market, because the sales in Japan just went down for years.
And they've been...
And Phantom Hourglass was a big hit over there. So
bump,
I think...
How did it do elsewhere?
It did pretty well.
It did pretty well everywhere.
Not spectacular. I mean, it's not... Yeah. In Europe, it certainly wasn't a success, say, on the scale of Layton, for instance. Layton's huge.
Layton is confoundingly huge.
Yeah,
well,
nice.
You know, I think they love Luke's voice.
it's terrible.
Professor!
Isn't that delightfully inaccurate?
I think I've got it! Look, a puzzle!
Now that comedy is evergreen right there.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Unless you never played the game, then it makes no sense.
No, I just turned the volume off.
I haven't, and it still makes me laugh.
Mm. Yeah, it's terrible. It's so bad.
It is atrocious. Yeah. But okay, well, anyway, we probably should move on to the final letter. This is from Ganginess from Saskatchewan, Canada.
Saskatchewan.
And, yep, Ganginess writes, I listened to your discussion about 1UP and EGM in RFN episode 130. I've never listened to 1UP, but I did read EGM back in the day. It is truly sad to see mainstays such as EGM and the 1UP network being shut down because of our current economy. That's arguable that was the cause.
We'll let that slide.
Yeah. It was a factor, sure. Back in the late 90s, Nintendorks was the only site that I visited every day. I even discovered NWR, which was called Planet GameCube back then, because Nintendorks would go down frequently. Yeah, they had a lot of server problems. And you guys were the only alternative. Nintendo Joe. Oh, that's too bad.
Nice.
Your podcast and the Nintendorks podcast are the only podcasts that I listen to immediately as they arrive in my iTunes.
So 6 weeks after we record them.
You had mentioned that your numbers have been decreasing, and Nintendorks hasn't been updated in a while. Even Brandon DeHart hasn't updated the DRC's daily reader comments in a few months. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Johnny stepping back from the site because he doesn't have the time to work, go to school, and play games? Could a similar thing be happening with other fan sites? Oh man, let's
work backwards. I'm sure it could.
Where to begin is my question. I mean, first off, let me just correct this right now. I didn't step back from the site because I have to work to make money in this bad economy. It's because I'm trying to finish my PhD and I really have to focus on that.
So you can be Dr. Johnny.
Yeah, that's the work that I do. I don't have a job outside of school or the website. I have financial support, and that's what gets me through. So it's more of trying to stay on schedule and take academics seriously so I can finally finish it. I've already been in school I've been in college for 9 years, and I kind of need to wrap it up. So that's why I kind of re-retired or whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, it has nothing to do with the economy whatsoever. And also, Nintendorks has a podcast? Why didn't someone tell me about this?
I didn't know.
That's crazy. I mean, Nintendorks, I was a huge fan of Nintendorks back in the old days. And I knew a lot of guys who wrote over there. Man, I can't even tell you. A guy named Scott, who used to write for them, basically taught me how to do PR. It's probably 8 years ago, 7 or 8 years ago. He gave me his contact list, which he probably wasn't supposed to do, and that gave me my kickoff, and that's how we started getting review copies and stuff for Planet GameCube. Brandon DeHart, I've known for a very long time. I haven't talked to him in ages, but I used to see him every E3, and he's an awesome guy. When I joined Planet in 2000, my dream was basically to use it as a stepping stone so I could go write for Nintendorks. Yeah. And that never happened. And I kind of gave up on that pretty quickly because I could tell Nintendorks was having a lot of problems. But I love those guys. And I didn't even know they were still around. So as soon as we finish recording, I'm going to go download their podcast and check out the website. That's awesome. Okay. But I don't know. Do you guys have any kind of attempt to answer his question?
Well, I would say that there's any number of reasons why a site would experience slowdown, and one of them could be just simply not having enough staff to accommodate a situation where primary members of the staff are busy.
Well, I mean, also, mm-hmm. you have to realize that, I mean, the web itself is, it's kind of like, yeah, it's an ever-changing beast. I mean, you know, I mean, as far as we're concerned, I mean, it used to be that there was only a handful of sites out there that were doing news. So as long as you focused on doing news and nothing but news, and as long as you just had a bunch of people that their primary focus was just getting news out there, finding it, throwing it up there, that was really cool. And you could, you know, get people into your site because there weren't that many news sites around. But now there's so many different news outlets that you kind of have to do other things to differentiate yourself.
You have to dominate.
Right. News has depreciated and other things have become more important.
Exactly. News isn't as valuable now as it used to be.
It's all about commentary.
But see, commentary, you run into the risk of our staff members writing things on behalf of the staff. And
yeah.
With
yes.
our staff members, that is a dangerous risk.
Well, you have to have a personality-based system, which is what 1UP had. before everybody got fired.
But I would say it's something that we have maybe as a minor, but mm-hmm. I would say by and large, a lot of our reviewers don't, or a lot of our staff doesn't really have a discernible personality.
Well, I'm sure they do, but it doesn't necessarily come across,
right, it doesn't come across
in the writing that they do. And maybe that's because we haven't made the avenues available to them, or maybe those aren't the kinds of articles that they're interested in writing. It could be a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I'm not sure that any of us, except maybe Greg for his verbose writing, have like a very strong personality that comes across in the writing.
I don't think I have that much personality in that comes across in my reviews. But I do think if you go through and read a lot of my reviews, and there are a lot of them to read, I think a common thread you'll find is that I usually talk a lot about game design, because I find that really interesting. And I think when a game goes bad, it's usually in that area. You know, it's not that I fancy myself a game designer, but I think as a critic and as a person who has a lot of experience playing games, I've gotten to the point where I can usually look at a game and at least see what went wrong. I can't necessarily say, well, they should have done this to fix it, but I can at least say, you know, this is bad. Like, this, guys, you should have thought about this a little more, you know? So I think in terms of gameplay structure and level design and things like that, that's kind of the main thing that I see that comes across in my reviews.
Yeah, your style is to analyze structure more than anything else.
Yeah, I'm very analytical by nature.
My style is to find something I hate about the game and make sure everyone knows about it.
Yep.
I guess that might just be a product of only having, what, 2 games that have scored above a 7 in my entire time reviewing games.
We need to send James a great game.
I know, we really
do. We need to do that.
Well, I mean, you got to Call of Duty World.
It's not a great game,
right?
Though. It just isn't.
Well, this is the thing, though. You're basically going to hold out. You're going to hold the reviews hostage until you get a
good
one.
I'm going to say Tomb Raider is so bland that writing a meaningful review is going to be...
Well, that's a 6. That's no review for the site.
6.
But Greg will get it,
though. Call me when you send me an 8, boys.
It's 6. In the no-publish zone.
Yeah. Done.
Well, all right. So, I mean... I think reviews is probably where our normal writing would have our most character come out.
Well, it should be the blog, really, but it's seldom used.
Yeah, but the blogs are a recent addition. So if you're going to go back and look through our, you know, maybe not for Greg and I, who haven't been here a whole long time, but for Johnny and John, you know, where if you want to really get a feel for them, it'd probably be in the reviews.
If John actually wrote reviews.
Yeah, there it is. Yep.
And we're out.
Scene.
Well, and you could even argue that a review really shouldn't be showcasing the writer's personality. That's not really the point of a review, right?
No, but it is the most personal thing that we write.
Maybe.
I don't know about that.
I mean, it's not really supposed to be about you. It's supposed to be about the game,
Impressions
right?
could be more personal than a review because it's more
I agree
about
with that.
Your experience. You know, it's not so much about criticism and analytical thought and a rigorous kind of process. It's about, I played it at this thing and this is what happened. You know, it's kind of this was my experience. It was more personal. It's less detached. So
impressions tend to be written in first person perspective almost always, and there's a reason for that. It is very personal. To get back to the question really quickly before we move on, could a similar thing be happening with other fan sites? Could they be breaking down due to the state of the economy? I would say no. As people get laid off from their jobs, they have more free time and they're more likely to start a website or go write for somebody.
I would
That's
say
what
yes,
I think.
Because ad revenue comes down, the cost of running the site doesn't come down, so it becomes more difficult to support the site.
Yeah, but sites aren't necessarily ad driven. A lot of blogs basically are just, you know, people do it for free.
No,
they don't have any uptake.
They're such low rent enterprises that it's not really
right.
Well, if you're running a blog, it's a low rent enterprise. We actually do have, you know, some expense we have to cover.
We got bills to pay,
sure.
But
bills.
They've gone down over time because the internet changes and the cost of things change. So, and a lot of ours is logistical stuff too. We have to ship games all over the world
to reviewers.
Yeah,
but I mean, it's part of the cost of doing business.
Yeah,
of course. But you know, if your website doesn't get review copies from publishers, then you don't have to worry about that. And if you're writing it at
so us 3 years ago.
But see, that's exactly the
just
thing.
Just depends.
Though, I mean, you can almost be a victim of your own success to a certain point because. The
you
better
can.
Your site does, the more review copies you get. The more review copies you get, the more you have to ship out, which drives up your costs.
Right. We're going to move on now to recent game announcements. A little a little news feature for the show before we end. And I put this in there because it just seems like the past couple weeks there have been quite a few games announced for Wii, especially Wii.
Yeah, it's
a strange time of year for game announcements to be coming out. A lot of them are Japanese. But I just thought, maybe we might have something to say about some of these. So first up, Boom Blocks Bash Party for Wii. It's coming out this spring. Obviously, it's the sequel to Boom Blocks. I don't know why they added two words to the title that are redundant with each other, but
Bash has alternate meaning though. Bash, like to bash something. Maybe that's it.
Bash party brawl.
And you are throwing things at them.
Could also mean a party. Anyway, Boom Blocks 2 has a focus on multiplayer modes and level sharing, and it adds space and underwater physics.
It's really exploding giraffes.
All I really care about is the box art. I just want to see the box art.
We should give a shout out. We should give a shout out to Voodoo on the forums for very slyly sneaking that in. It's a very nicely thought out post about Boom Blocks' commercial history, and now it might have managed to sell a few more copies on a longer time period, and then in amongst his praise for the game slipped in "and awesome box art," which I know was a reference to James Constant hitting on that theme.
You know what? I think we need to have a Boom Blocks 2 cover art contest.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
That is a very good idea. I like that a lot.
Make it happen.
Well,
John.
I think the focus on multiplayer is probably a good idea, because as great as the first Boom Blocks is for multiplayer, it's actually very limited. And it also has the problem, at least in the co-op mode, you have to unlock a bunch of stuff. The cooperative version of the first Boom Blocks, you start with only one world, and it's like the shooting crap, which is the least interesting part of the game. And you have to drudge through that to get to the other stuff that's a lot better. So I think they could definitely do a lot more with the multiplayer in that game, and that's a good idea that they're focusing on that. I wish they were focusing on getting rid of the little characters, but they're still there.
They're still, you gotta play on the brand at this point. There's real recognition and attachment between the two. I like the idea of the space and underwater, changing up the physics rather than silly stuff. In terms of widening out the kinds of things you're doing rather than the shooting gallery stuff, which was so incongruous. And just isn't this in a lot of other Wii games? That was definitely the low point of Boom Blocks. So to provide variety in a different way with some of the with these different physics and things is much better. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, the level sharing part is interesting to me. I'm always happy to hear that a developer is putting more attention to the online parts of their Wii game. But I think it's odd that they specifically mentioned that and not the level editor itself, because I think the editor is so hard to use. And because it's physics-based, a lot of times you'll do something in the editor that seems like a good idea, and then when you test it, it all just falls apart immediately because it can't support itself. And I feel like they really need to do a lot better... A lot more guidance in the editor to basically help you create something that's actually viable and doesn't just look cool. But I do like the idea. They're doing kind of a Smash Brothers-esque level sharing where you can send levels to your friends, but you can also send them to EA, and then they'll basically host a level on some kind of time period that you can pull off. And I think they're also putting some buttons in, so if you're playing some grab levels where you pull the blocks out, like Jenga, and you say, "Wow, I really like these levels," and then they're going to have a button on that same menu that says "Download levels like this," and that's a great idea.
Yeah, it is.
So if they're going to do all that hosting,
that was
great.
The big thing, wasn't it? It's just that when it was strictly between Wii friends, it really wasn't, it wasn't a lot of scope to enjoy downloadable content, user-generated content, because it was you would have had to trade codes, and as you said, with the complexity of a level editor, the likelihood of having someone on your Wii friends list that's, gone to the trouble of making a really good Boom Blocks level, although it was pretty unlikely, so it was very much, you had this complex level editor in there, but what was it really worth? And they will have to resolve the complexity issue, but the idea that, you know, now you can have a hub where you can get user-generated content from actually could spur people to make levels, you know, more, because if they, you know, if they do download ones that are good, it might get their sort of creative juices flowing more, whereas I think it was just a bit of a non-starter with the way the first one was.
Yeah, and I'm even more interested in the prospect of maybe EA serving up some free levels to download after the game comes out. You know, maybe their level designer makes something once a week and you can download that. I mean, that would have been great in Brawl. It didn't happen. But I would love to play something that EA made, because I think they're the ones who actually have the expertise to do this. My problem with the focus on level sharing is that I'm not sure people are making levels that are worth sharing. I'm looking forward to be proven wrong. So the next game that was announced, this isn't a timeline, but the next game on my little list here is Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, The Crystal Bearers. This is a Wii game, and it's not that it was announced so much as that it was kind of brought back from the dead. This is there's a trailer that came out this last week. It was included on the disc with Final Fantasy Echoes of Time, the game that's coming out, it just came out in Japan for Wii and DS at the same time. It's this, you know, you can play online. It's got intercompatibility between the two formats. And anyway, it had a trailer on the disc, on the Wii version, for The Crystal Bearers, which is a game we haven't seen much of in the past 2 years.
We saw a trailer, 2 years ago that was basically just video, and that looked nothing like the trailer we had saw 2 years before, which was video.
Yeah. And those are all very short also.
Yeah.
This is quite a long trailer, has a lot of gameplay and a lot of story, and I think you can really glean a lot of information out of it. It looks like the game's coming along. It looks like it's maybe in some kind of mature state.
And we have a target date now, too.
Do we?
Well, I think they're saying Q409.
Well, there you go. In Japan, at least, yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe that, based on the trailer. I mean, it looks like they've got a lot going on in there, you know. It looks like they're kind of maybe getting on the final leg. But, you know, without understanding Japanese, it's a little hard to say what the story's about, but the character art is similar to what we saw a couple years ago. It doesn't look like the other Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. The characters are a little more lifelike. They're a little more proportioned like real people, you know. So it looks more like a main Final Fantasy game, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
And it looks like the gameplay itself is going to be sort of action RPG style. It's not going to have menu-based battles. Instead, it looks like you kind of do action combat with the enemies in the game through some kind of telekinetic power.
Well, that is somewhat like the last Final Fantasy, the first Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, though.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That was basically an action RPG. I mean, it's an RPG. It's somewhat menu-based, but you do push a button to attack the enemy. You don't go to a menu and click attack.
Right.
This one looks like it'll be even more action-based and is obviously using motion control in some way, but the idea of combat is that you pick up objects and throw them or whack them at enemies, or even you pick up enemies and throw them at each other. I think there's something in the trailer of making a bomb, you know, the bomb enemy in Final Fantasy, like making it angry and it's about to explode, and then you pick it up and throw it at a group of enemies over there and it blows them up. So that's some pretty cool interaction possible. There's even a cutscene with, it looks like they're using portals to like throw a tree through a portal and hit the other guy. I don't know. That may be part of gameplay as well. So it's definitely interesting.
It does also, it is not the same trailer, but it is the same aesthetic we saw in the original, in the second trailer from 2 years ago. So
that's right.
We originally thought the game was completely aborted and then restarted again. And it turns out it wasn't. They just went dark on the development for 2 years.
That's what it appears to be, yeah. So the game is actually coming out, maybe sooner than later, and so far it looks pretty good. It was nice to hear about that, because the rumors were kind of piling up that maybe it was canceled.
Taking it out back and
giving it the axe.
All right, the next game on the list is TMNT. This is, we don't have an official title yet, but it's a fighting game.
Some people are saying it's going to be called TMNT Smash Up. They're actually making making it that explicit.
I think that's based on the French press release.
Yeah.
So that's not really
wrong.
Uh-huh. It's not not necessarily an official English title. Yeah,
I don't say that as a joke. I mean, every time we get a press release from a French company or from a French PR firm, it always seems like there's something wrong in it.
Yeah. Well, this is a fighting game, obviously based on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And the interesting thing about it is it's exclusive for Wii, and it's being developed by Masahiro Sakurai and Game Arts.
Are we sure that Sakurai personally is involved? I know Game Arts are. I was unclear on Sakurai.
I'm pretty sure I read that, but I could don't take my
Game
word.
Arts for sure, for absolute certain.
Game Arts for sure, and they are the studio who worked with Sakurai on
they
Super Smash
the
Brothers
bulk
Brawl.
Of the developers, although there were developers from other teams and studios and stuff.
Right, but Game Arts basically made Brawl, and so far, I mean, from a couple screenshots and a description, it sounds like this Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game is going to be a lot like Brawl.
Yeah.
Could be really interesting. Do we think Game Arts would be able to get engine usage for Brawl, or do you think they're going to have to rebuild the entire system?
So reverse engineer, probably a little bit.
If they develop their own engine for it, then they probably own the rights to it.
No, because they were a Nintendo-funded kind of sub-studio at the time, remember?
Well, yeah, I don't really care about that, honestly.
Regardless of that, with this, apparently it could be a bit of a kind of different take in terms of, like, there may be, I think, a health bar in addition to the goal being to knock people out of the stage.
Whoa.
So it's kind of like two, you know,
you could kill people two ways.
Yeah.
Well, there's a mode like that in Brawl, isn't there, where everybody has hit points?
Yeah.
I mean, the bosses
work
that way.
Yeah, but it's not like it's double knock you out.
But it's not
thing.
Double. I would guess it's something like you can probably get rid of them quicker if you sort of adroitly knock them out of the stage, but you can just pound on them until they're dead or something, maybe. That's, I guess, for them to balance. Or maybe that'll give you options as to, like, how you want to play. You know, kind of like with Brawl, obviously you've got, like, coin matches and all sorts of different stuff. You know, they may do it that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to this. I'm actually a pretty big fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighters game for Super Nintendo, which is a Street Fighter-style fighting game.
Yeah, that was back when they were, like, the genre. You know, everything had to have a 2D one-on-one fighting game.
Right. And that one was actually really good. And I thought they had some really cool characters. I wasn't a huge Ninja Turtles fan. I knew some of those characters, and I didn't know some of the other ones, but overall, I think it's one of the better 2D fighters for Super Nintendo.
Now,
so
this one will be online, right? Do we know that?
Oh, that's unknown. But based on their previous experience, I'm not sure I want it to be.
It will be online in the relative sense.
I heard some sort of vague assertion that they'd have online and it'd be better, but
that's nothing
solid.
You would hope if they do online that they'll make some effort to improve upon
Brawl.
We're
going to do it exactly the same. Because Brawl worked great.
If it works.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work.
Okay.
Yeah. It sold the fourth most games in the world last year. It worked.
It worked as a point on the back of the box, at least.
Yeah.
Okay. The next one on here is Bubble Bobble Plus. This is, I think it was just announced today as of recording, for WiiWare. This is coming from Taito, who are now owned by Square Enix. And it's a new Bubble Bobble. It includes the basically all the levels from the original game, and also some 200 or 300 new levels. And it has some kind of rearranged mode for the original game. Also has 4-play cooperative, and you'll be able to download level packs for even more levels for $2 each. But my understanding is the base download has 400 levels. So if you really need more than that, you can buy more levels for $2
each.
I need
more levels.
Which is not so bad at all.
More bubble.
If you play 400 levels, are you really going to remember the ones you've already played?
Yeah.
Maybe. I can definitely remember some of the levels from the original Bubble Bobble.
Some of them, but 400? So eventually something's going to get pushed out. I mean, just by the sheer limit of capacity of the human brain.
Well, I'm mainly looking forward to the music. You should die in a fire.
It's one of my favorite themes but yeah, the, ever.
The co-op is... It is mine too, but I like to hear it once a year. That's about all I can take. yeah, four-player co-op could be really good too.
Bubble bobble theme, 24/7, 365.
Time to look for that ringtone.
Let's hope that you don't need four players to see the true ending. The true ending to a game that begins with something about Journey to the Magical Cave of Monsters. All right, the last games on our list of new game announcements are Spore Hero for Wii and Spore Hero Arena for DS. These are the, Spore already came out on DS, the creature creator at least, but Spore Hero is the long-awaited Wii version of Spore, and it's definitely not a port or a remake of the PC version. It is something different. It's the press release that EA sent out had very few details about this, but it's coming out this year, and it's apparently focuses on adventure game elements. I guess you're creating a character and then basically playing through an adventure game with the character that you created. Spore Hero Arena is more of like a, you know, obviously some kind of combat game where you fight your creatures. Maybe it's Pokemon style, but more action based. I don't know. But I don't know. From judging from the names of the two and the concept, it sounds like there's a very high possibility that they could connect together. Maybe, you know, you can send your character from one into the other and do some things. So that might be an interesting little feature. But Spore finally coming to Wii. I guess. In some sense, I'm a little disappointed that it's not the PC version, just because I always thought that the PC game would work really well on Wii and would be interesting to play with the Wii remote. And it seems like it would fit really well with the whole demographic of Wii. But they're doing something different with it, and we don't really have a whole lot of details on it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see some sort of, you know, online sort of trading your creatures or something like that. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, I mean, this whole Sporepedia thing, it seems a bit ambitious for Wii Online, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it maybe that could have been a real breakout, you know, in terms of what games do with online on Wii. It would have been a good candidate for it, I think. But it looks like it's probably going to be more of an offline thing where, you know, you kind of make your own... You make your own creature, and then you go play an adventure game with it. Mm-hmm. So we will see. All right, that's the last game. That's the end of our show. Thanks for listening. And, of course, as always, thanks to the RFN crew for being here.
Yep.
And just another quick reminder, we really appreciate getting your emails every week. You can send those to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And don't forget to go check out Luigi's Mansion and tell us what you think in the forums. We will be reading your comments on the next episode as we discuss it. All right, that's it. Bye-bye.
Later.
See you.
So long.
You know, I think we spend about $5 shipping out a game, thereabouts.
Yeah.
There's cost in there if we have, I don't know, 20 games come in the December time frame, the Christmas rush.
Yeah,
we probably did at least that many.
That's $1,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's $100. But good try. Maybe
bucks.
I should send you personal trainer math.
Dude, man. Uh-huh. You're lucky I've been leaning towards cutting this, James.
Good. Go for it.
No, that part stays in.
Yeah. No, it's
I decree. You agreed to it first, and then you corrected yourself.